Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Cardio and retaining muscle during your fat loss phase. So this has been our continuation of podcasts on just how to keep all the muscle while you're dieting, whether through nutrition, sleep, stress management, how you do it through training. And now we're getting into actual cardio implementation and how we structure that around to keep that hard-earned muscle, but still get the goal of getting body fat off and getting stage lean.
Yeah. And I think with the cardiovascular activity, there's a couple components to kind of discuss. But I think, you know, the easiest one that to kind of start with is like cardio versus calorie adjustments and kind of, you know, where do we sit as far as like that, you know, hierarchy of where do these adjustments start to be made? Because there comes a point, especially from like a time management perspective with some people where, you know, it starts to challenge whether, you know, cardio is the best answer. How does that look like with us from a steps count perspective? Because the ideal on paper from a fatigue management standpoint is like a large bit of the adjustment from a cardiovascular activity is step counts. And we hear all these people talk about preps that are just steps only. And it's like, well, that's probably not realistic for a large percentage of the population. Right. So, I think that's, I'm excited for this because it's going to start to like look behind the curtain of like what actually happens for a large percentage of the competitors that the steps only preps are not the norm.
Yeah. It gets into like, okay, when you look at cardio and you look at what we're trying to do and present on stage, designing an entire program based on specificity, right? Mm-hmm. So as a bodybuilder, what are your needs? It's like, well, we need a high degree of muscle tissue and eventually we'll need a low amount of body fat. So the large component around that is driving your training around building and retaining that tissue. And so things that are going to be interfering with that likely are ones that we want to be reducing, which if we look on the opposite end of the spectrum of what would it be someone with a very low amount of muscle mass, which would be like an endurance marathon runner, right? The extreme, someone doing a high amount of cardiovascular activity and that much type of training causes a decreasing, well, not a decrease, but it won't cause the near level adaptations to grow like resistance training would. You just don't want to run around with being a large individual when you're trying to go very, very far. So at some point there's this divergence, right? If you have goals of large muscle mass, you probably want to be reducing your cardiovascular training. Or if you had goals of like high endurance capacity, you're probably going to want to be reducing your resistance training component. Now mm-hmm. with bodybuilders, we're in this kind of spectrum of like, well, how much cardio should be done to still achieve this high level of muscularity without in causing this interference with building muscle or retaining muscle. And there's actually a pretty decent paper that came out not too long ago. I had it pulled up. It was a meta-analysis in 2022. They reviewed like 43 papers. And basically their conclusions were concurrent aerobic and strength training does not compromise muscle hypertrophy and maximal strength development. However, explosive strength gains may be attenuated. And so there's just in the evidence world, there's kind of this continued showing that an aerobic training isn't as impactful towards hypertrophic outcomes as we kind of once believed. So people were like scared to do cardio, right? Like, I'm just going to sit on the couch. I'm not going to walk around. I'm not going to do cardio. I'm only going to resistance train. But at some point I would say that too much cardio is going to have that countering effect. So there's a balance between it. And where that kind of lies is, well, where do you want it for bodybuilding? And you want enough cardio present, I think, to help mitigate probably some of the health risks that we have from being just large bodybuilders. And then in turn, also keeping a degree of ability to train efficiently in our resistance training. So it's some type of work capacity present. I think we could agree, Luke, that maybe we have a baseline present of cardio of something like 4 days per week for 20, 25 minutes. Yep. Maybe that could be a combination. We'll talk about different types of combinations, but if you have that baseline there entering into prep. You're already adapted to cardio. You're already training within this recovery capacity. Likely that's going to cause no impedance to your muscle retaining ability. So we move into prep. The first thing we have the largest area to pull from would be calories.
Yep.
We don't usually increase cardio off the bat. It's usually calories, because that, for one, is the most measurable thing to go off of accuracy, right? So it's because we, you know, like there's issues with just trying to implement cardio and the accuracy to do so. And where, what errors have you seen in that?
I think it's an effort piece too. Like the cardiovascular activity done in the off season is just kind of plotted along, and then you start prep and they're like, heck yeah, it's prep time. And then like the 4x25 minutes that you have as the baseline is not the same 4x25 minutes that was done in the off season. And so you're getting more out of that session. And then the inverse happens when you get into prep, like there's a point that crosses over where now that quality starts to dip. And so you have to actually increase the, due to like adaptation to cardiovascular activity, lowering in quality, from like a fatigue management standpoint and the effort that gets put into it, because you've lost the excitement of starting prep. Now that activity has to come up in order to match the output from a caloric standpoint, right? So it is a little bit messier to match relative to just caloric intake, which, and like people try to do it with the heart rate monitors on the thing of like, I do, you know, 200 calories of cardio or whatever. And I just, the inconsistency of those heart rate monitors makes me really hesitant to ever use that. Like I would rather a time duration with hitting a certain heart rate more often, or is to me more predictable than trying to use those heart rate monitors that are on there to predict caloric expenditure, right? So for me, it's more, what is the quality the person's doing? What is the modality the person's doing? And how can I keep these two as consistent as possible throughout the prep so that the time adjustments that I make are now representative of progressions in the deficit? And we're actually seeing that be more impactful with each change, where now the cardio doesn't start to pile up. Because where it piles up and it becomes an issue with tissue retention, in my opinion, is when you see the quality and the modality change a lot, because you're either getting changes in output due to modality change, or you're getting changes in output due to quality.
I think that's a good point to take away as well of the modality, that being already adapted to one in the off season. Another point to why you should be doing cardio if you're the person that's going to need to be doing cardio on prep. And maybe that's what we bring up in our pre-prep phase. Like if for some reason you weren't doing cardio, we absolutely want it in our pre-prep phase when you have the calories to support adaptations that are needed for implementing that. Then once we're into prep, you want to keep that type of modality that you know you can sustain. So it's not something where like you're on the Stairmaster and that's just beating you to death. But you've had that off season, can tolerate it. All of a sudden in prep, you need to switch it, right? Let's already have one in place that is just sustainable from that point of view. And right, without switching it, then that causes a lot of the fatigue to crop up. And you brought up another point of cardio adaptations. So it's a few things, right? You're getting more efficient doing your cardio, so you're just getting better at it. Body weight's declining, which maybe that isn't a huge impact in the beginning. But also, I think it's just more of the all the other adaptations that come along with cardio, making you really efficient at it. And in turn, your body's trying to preserve calories. So you're not going to expend as many calories doing it, but you'll see that heart rate start to decline. And trying to maintain that range can be okay for a duration until it's overly fatiguing. And that's what we're like looking for client feedback on, you know, your legs feeling heavy on your check-ins. How, you know, do you feel like you're now limiting your leg training in any degree? We're kind of seeing those signs, especially in we're looking at visuals. We're seeing like legs are starting to like blur in detail, but everything else is looking kind of harder. You're like, all right, legs are just staying kind of inflamed. That might be the time we're like, all right, let's not increase cardio intensity to keep up with this heart rate range. Let's just set it in place. And then from that point, we would just add on duration, but not to long sessions. Ideally, shorter sessions are going to be a lot less fatiguing. You thought about doing cardio straight for 30 minutes. That kind of sucks versus doing maybe 3 10-minute sessions, right? Just giving the comparison, like, oh yeah, you can knock out a 10-minute cardio session, no problem. So keeping the duration shorter would also be helping manage the fatigue, because what do you get to do? You get to rest, get to go eat a meal, have some recovery locally happen, and then you could do your next cardio session. So that would be least impactful for fatigue. Mm-hmm. And that in turn would be least impactful for your resistance training.
Which I think from an interference effect discussion, like the duration of time between cardiovascular activity and training can also be something that conflates the ability to accurately assess how much it's impacting someone. So like schedule change happens, you get cardiovascular activity done first thing in the morning. It's like one meal and then into training. It's like you do a 30-minute cardio session and then one meal and then go train within that, like, you know, that's probably a 2.5-3 hour time window. That's going to affect that training session. And so typical rule of thumb that I've kind of used from some of the data I did and looked through when we were doing some data pulls throughout grad school, was kind of like that 5 to 6 hour mark. If we can get 5 to 6 hours of gapping between the cardiovascular activity and the training session, it helps with like lowering that interference from the cardiovascular activity into the training, where we can actually manage that fatigue better and not see it be detrimental from the performance acutely on that day. So that is something that I do think needs to be communicated from coach to client, of potentially scheduling out the day if that's possible with someone scheduled to do that. Now, there are going to be cases where that's not possible schedule wise, and it's more about making sure you get everything in. But I think if we're talking about maximizing tissue retention and training performance in the gym in order to drive that tissue retention, that time gap is one that can really help.
Do you think there's a bit of like, it's gender dimorphic in a bit, males and females, as far as the impact to training that it makes?
I do. I do see it be a little bit more impactful from a male perspective than a female.
I think it's just moving a larger body weight, or that doesn't have to do with it, or just being even, you probably even get down to like fiber type adaptations around training.
Yeah. Anecdotally, it does seem that like the performance metrics are so much higher too. The likelihood for drop off is a bit higher. So it's like you combine the body weight of the individual from a male to a female for the cardiovascular activity is going to drive more of a total stimulus. And then you cross that with a higher performing athlete, just from a total poundage on the bar perspective, the likelihood is a little bit more likely, because the ability to maintain that performance requires a bit more, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've seen even around the physiology for females with hormonal setups, having like higher estrogen levels and then having higher amounts of like type 1 muscle fiber, that they might be a little bit more suited for like steady state endurance work, and also mm-hmm. just that physiology and being more reliant around fatty acids during training over glucose. And having estrogen present all could lead to having like improved recovery capacity for the same type of volume as a male. So lean to, in other words, saying that it's when you see that female that is doing like 2 lower body cardio sessions, like on whatever, the elliptical or something, and then also able to train legs 3 days a week, you're like, how in the world can they do that? It's like, well, it's probably some of the physiology around females that are allowing them to do so. But also it is increased work capacity adaptation too. So if we were a male doing that, eventually you'd have some level of adaptation, but probably still not comparable to what a female can do with managing longer steady state cardio and still not creating the same amount of fatigue as like a male would. But I do completely agree though. Like if we are able to separate, especially in prep where it becomes more impactful, the cardio and the resistance training session, the better. If you were like forced to it, you have to do it, you know, do it post-training, or I even used to do like 5 to 10 minutes before and then hit the remainder after. So it's like spread out to agree, like the cardio before training feels like a warm up, opposed to like this long fatiguing sessions. And then you just have a little bit left to do. But if you're that person that I would say, you know, that's how I am right now. I eat a meal and I go train, that I won't do cardio in the morning. And I would put it like maybe before the second meal from the last, right? So not right before bed, but mid afternoon, I hit my cardio and you're like, well, it's not fasted cardio. Like, oh my gosh, I'm breaking the rules. And that's not as nearly the important factor versus making sure you have enough sleep and upholding training performance. And also you're going to have just a better cardio output session versus being dehydrated and fast in the morning. So, and you notice too, like if people come up like, man, it's so much easier to get my heart rate up in the afternoon or like after I'm hydrated and with food, it's like, yeah, cardio feels way easier when you're hydrated and have food in you versus doing it like first thing out of bed with no fluids in you. So, that's how you could separate out and spread it out. And, you know, if you're doing this, try to do this at a high level. Usually by that time, we're getting some type of cardio equipment at home to be time efficient.
Yeah. And I think that's the time efficiency one is the big piece with cardio and doing that across a prep, because there is prep situations where we can't lean on steps as much as we have to from a cardiovascular activity standpoint due to the time constraints component. And I think that's the situations where tissue retention tends to be a bit tougher and or fatigue management tends to be a bit tougher because they are maxing out their schedule, one, from a stress management standpoint, but two, cardiovascular activity gets a bit higher on average in that situation because we can't use the steps count escalations in order to get the caloric output we need from cardiovascular activity. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's the necessary exchange that has to happen. Is it going to be ideal? In some cases, no, because I think it's going to push someone past their recovery capacity. And it just is what it is. I think you just need to realize that that might not be the optimal approach. Like optimally is going to be what set up with steps, diet, cardio is going to be the least fatiguing to cause the same amount of body fat loss. And for some individuals, they just won't have the lifestyle to do it. I used to have that lifestyle, right? I worked 9 to 5. I had like coaching on the side and would have to do cardio morning and night. And I couldn't drive up step count because I was stuck at a work desk for a lot of the day. So I had to do cardio work. Fast forward now is, you know, I have flexibility to be able to just only do steps if I chose to. This last prep, I was doing 15,000 steps at my peak, which at some point in prep, cardio got overly fatiguing and was impacting everything. So I just transitioned to only steps for the last duration and managed fatigue and still had the same outcome for fat loss. So it's just playing a game of how you're going to create that deficit with the least fatigue possible. And I would say in general, like 2,000 steps is about, you know, a mile walking, which will burn about 100-ish calories, which might be the equivalent of like 10-ish minutes of cardio work. So 20 minutes of walking equates to like 10 minutes of moderate intensity cardio. Now, lots of variations within that. Don't hold a gun to me on that, but just to get an idea. So, you know, I was doing 25 minutes of cardio. I put that into 50 minutes of walking, which was about 5,000 steps. So ways to do it, right? There's multiple ways to do it. I'm not telling you cardio is wrong or steps are wrong. It's just tools to be able to toggle with and try to create the best outcome for that person's own individual lifestyle and recovery ability.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we didn't really dive into it, but I think it might be worth bringing up is like differencing in modalities and like how potentially that could affect fatigue management, because again, this is a little bit dimorphic as well. The 110-pound bikini girl can do Stairmaster 5-6 days a week. And that's honestly probably necessary from an output perspective to get out of cardiovascular activity for them, where you put 250-pound bodybuilder on Stairmaster and that's going to wreck them and like that. And so this is where modality is not a general recommendation across the board. It's specific to the clients that's presented. And it's more like categorizing it according to, you know, what we see drives the most fatigue or potentially where the benefit is, all the way down to the least fatiguing being steps and using those as tools, depending on the client case presented in front of you.
And just shameless plug for the female module, because females are not just little men, right? They actually do differentiate. And
yeah,
we see in training, eccentric loading. So just like you would be like mm-hmm. going down in a squat and having to reverse out of it, or on the Stairmaster, hitting a step and having to stop your body weight and reverse out of it, that causes less muscular damage in females than it does to a male. So it's another reason why females like recover relatively quickly from mm-hmm. training, can handle more volume. Well, also why they can handle the Stairmaster better than you guys out there. So they have just better capability to not have as much damage occur. And so it also is probably body weight specific too, like you said, Luke. But with that being said, that's the, to get enough output out of someone, it might going to be, have to be higher effort level or modality that allows that effort level and durations of time. But the reality of some of this is that there's females out there that I've seen on 2.5 hours of cardio, and that's a, that can be okay. And it's like, oh my gosh, no one, we should be promoting our coaching through, you'll only do 30 minutes of cardio with our J3U coaching team. It's like, that's just not the truth of what's out there. Like, some people have to go so far beyond their body fat set point. And they're also like, you know, unfortunate for them, they have a metabolism that just adapts strong in the opposite direction, to where they get low food and to create a deficit, they aren't on a high amount of cardio, and that's just what it takes. So it's not someone we want to prep all along the way like that, but for like the last leg of prep, like that might be what it takes to get someone there. So that's the reality of someone having to do high amounts of like moderate effort cardio, because like steps just aren't going to cut it for that individual. And then we have our other extreme too, right? Like the
steps only.
Steps only, like, and I've done this, but again, it's the opposite, right? Like, you're having some cardio and maybe that gets pulled out, or I have the guy that has such a high amount of food that we can pull that so much, and we just keep cardio just at a baseline, or maybe drop it at the end of prep. Or the guy that I've had that is like, has a job that just is such high step count, there's no way I can add cardio in. I've had people that like that 15 to like 25,000 steps, that varies, and there's just no way. And that alone, that step count's so high, it is the limiter in fatigue. And it's like, that's the one I can't do anything about, it because they have to work, you know?
And it's the prep that has to be planned the best, in my opinion, because it's removing almost an entire metric at which you can drive a deficit by doing that. And in order to get that person all the way into true contest shape, the start point calorically relative to body composition has to be so good, because that's the only metric you have to pull from, pretty much, right? So you obviously got like lipolytics and things like that, but in the scheme of like the big levers to pull plan wise you're pretty much fully removing the idea of doing cardio with that person. Like, The 22, 23, 24,000 steps per day is just way too hard to manage on top of cardiovascular activity.
Yeah, a lot of times that's like on top of, sometimes there's shift workers that have that have to like, could be patrol work or something, right? It's where it's also an altered sleep schedule on top of a high step count. Man, that's a hard person to prep. Like, you'll eventually, like, if you're that person out there, you get to a point where like, I don't get it. I'm following the diet, I'm doing my cardio, I'm training, I'm taking all the things I'm supposed to be taking, and I'm just like, I'm not, my body weight's just stalled. I just don't get leaner, or you just look softer and smaller. It's like, man, it's your environment that you're trying to implement that in. That is your limiting factor. So you can be like, coach, I'm doing it all, but the fact is your environment's stopping you. So
It's the
unfortunate, just, you got to work, but if you want to do this like to a higher level and move that, you know, ceiling up some, you probably need to switch your job. But back to the other question you had about, like, you know, modality with being the one that causes the, like, the least eccentric component would probably be best. So like cycling or the elliptical. Like, it doesn't have a lot of impact to it. Like, those probably cause, to a lesser degree, impact for your training, and probably more so just around leg training. So I could see even doing, if you had two cardio modalities, do you even rotate around to where you did some, like some that was a little bit more leg biased early in the week? And it, you know, if it was a bit more like Stairmaster work, that could probably be okay. And then around leg training, you move to something that was, you know, less eccentric loading. But in general, we're just running the same thing.
Yeah.
One I wanted to bring up, Lucas, how do you feel about HIIT training versus steady state throughout prep?
It's a change in emotions, whether it's all season or prep, because from an off season perspective, it's one of the greatest tools you can use from a health mitigation standpoint of managing the health metrics for a lot of these athletes. But transitioning into a prep, to me, it's a modality that it can save you time maybe once a week for the specific client case that's really struggling with managing a time component. But man, it can make fatigue management so hard on the back end of prep that I really try to avoid it as much as I can within the prep confines and scenarios. And it's a lot of times a situation where if I have someone in the all season doing HIIT, it may stay in like the first portion of prep and then drop down to like something that's less intensive from a modality or a setup perspective from like how they're performing their cardio, whether it's steady state or more steps get added or a combination of the both. But yeah, it's coming out at some point for the majority of my preps.
Yeah, I asked for myself.
You're in this dilemma where you're like, it's at 4 HIIT sessions now a week you're doing?
Yeah, after my upper sessions, which...
Yeah.
It makes it, it's a little daunting. Like, I have the recovery capacity to do it, but I know now, right. So I know like moving a prep, like I won't be able to sustain that, but you have to remember like, right. Like what are you trying to gain out of that? And for me, it's like the heart health adaptation benefits. Like it's not about necessarily managing an energy, you know, surplus, because I can do that with steps and cardio. So it's primarily through, yeah, health and also keeping work capacity for leg days. But when you're dieting, I see my best lab work and when I'm just in prep and body weight's coming down. So you're gaining a lot of the health benefits, I think, going into a prep that you're trying to uphold with doing your HIIT in the off season. The next component from there would just be work capacity, which I think already improves just as you're dieting down anyway, lower body weight. So like, I don't think that's even the limiting factor. So you could say like, well, what about keeping some type of metabolic flexibility, right? The ability to switch between these fuel sources and stay more insulin sensitive. It's like, well, you're doing that on prep too. So I think it could be a transition just for me, for myself, like increasing step count and moving maybe that to a lower effort, like steady state, and then to where eventually it's pulled out how I've normally have done it and tapered that down.
Yeah, I would agree. I think your point of what is the goal directly correlates with HIIT being pulled out during prep because it doesn't match the goal set. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, now as far as like, I know that's the thing with some people do that in reverse, which it's
it's just
right. It's steps to like steady state cardio, then to HIIT because I really got to pull them off because we're behind. And that's when it's like the most fatigue at the worst time. So if you're going to be, if you know that client and you know, they have to go there, that's where I would want to flip it to where we're already doing HIIT in the off season and they're already adapted a bit, and then we could drive up some steady state, and then eventually we're able just to remove HIIT and give them a longer prep timeline. Cause that's really the issues, which we're running into when you have that problem is like, oh shit, I'm out of time. Let me jack their cardio through the roof. It's like, yeah, you're going to run into a huge, huge bottleneck there. So.
Yeah. And I brought this up on the last episode, but I'll be honest. I think most issues with tissue retention relative to cardiovascular activity has to do with rates of loss being too high.
Yeah, I would completely agree. It's that last chunk of time on prep where you can just deflate someone. And it's
go ahead. I think it's, yeah, go ahead. You knock, you go.
I wasn't talking about drugs. Like even with the drugs there, like you still won't get someone that looks, because look at all the open guys. There's plenty of guys that are massive with a ton of drugs, but they still aren't stage ready. So what happened? It's like, yeah, probably ran out of time. The guys with cardio sky high, we've seen that guy. He's still not in shape on stage. So drugs won't, prevent this process from still not happening, right?
Yeah, and it's shout out to Tony Montgomery. I had a conversation with him last week, just with some of his research he's doing. And it makes me, like, with some of the stuff we do, want twins to compare. But I really think, just truly anecdotally, if you took the same person and you had the situation one where you run it kind of like we prefer, where it's a drop off in activity the last few weeks, and maybe switching in modalities of like dropping some steady state cardio into steps, or maybe even just removing it fully because you're ready ahead and you're going into the show, versus the flip because the timeline's not right, so you have to push rate of loss and now cardio goes up in that last piece. Man, it's such a different physique. And it's almost, to me, it can change someone's physique like 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds.
Yeah.
Like visually. So easily. Like I 100 wholeheartedly believe some of my athletes I've put on stage where we've done the two show dynamic. We've rushed it a bit for the first show, and then they stand on stage like 6, 7 pounds heavier for the second one. It's solely to do with fatigue drop.
I believe it and I've seen it.
I know. So it's so important to get the timeline right, so then you don't run into these problems we're talking about of tissue retention from too much cardio.
Well, I think we have nailed that one enough for everyone. Yeah, so
it's in the coffin.
Give you enough framework there to help plan out your preps and hold on to all that muscle you earned in the off season and still get stage lean. So if you have questions or comments, you can leave them down below or join the J3U forum where Luke and I answer all your questions in as depth as you want to go. So we will talk to you next time. Thanks for tuning in.